Yesterday, inflation was slowing down. Today, it's full steam ahead. We'll make it make sense. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Prices at the wholesale level rose by a full percent in July. This is what we're learning from the Producer Price Index, which is out this morning. Now, not only is 1% inflation in a month more than economists were expecting, it is also at odds with numbers out yesterday. Those numbers, the Consumer Price Index, showed inflation at the retail level was cooling down. So, which is it? Are we getting more inflation or less? Diane Swonk is chief economist at tax and advisory firm Grant Thornton and joins us. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
So can you make this make sense for us? Inflation sort of coming down yesterday, but the producer numbers we got today are coming up. What's going on?
Yeah, it's really a difference in, you know, what they're measuring. One is the biggest increase in producer prices in July was due to an increase in margins on vehicles and vehicle parts. And we know that's where the shortages are the most acute. And that is pushing up the margins that people make on those vehicles. And that was the single largest component in that number. And we did see vehicle prices also rise in the CPI. And so when you look at the data together, you kind of see this real dynamic going on in the vehicle sector, which is the most acute in terms of there's just no supply on dealer lots and they can't get parts. And all of that is showing up in producer prices as well.
So with all that, where are we headed with inflation? Do you think it's starting to moderate?
The bet is still good that it will start to moderate. And that's because the question is, you know, how much and how much residual inflation we'll have. But the bottom line is, you know, the Delta variant is also another factor that not only messes up supply chains, but it also will take away some of the tailwind we've seen in things like airfares, hotel room rates, all of those things that related to vacations. People don't need lockdowns to be afraid of contagion. I do think we're going into an economy that will be warmer than it was pre-pandemic for a while, but not as hot as it's been this summer.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton. Good to talk to you as always.
Thank you.
The Chinese government today unveiled a broad 5-year plan to tighten regulation across many sectors of its economy. This follows crackdowns on the education and tech sectors in recent weeks. The government's concerns there were around national security and monopolistic behavior in the world's second largest economy. These waves of regulation, though, have worried investors, and the BBC's Howard Jang says this wider plan will probably not help.
It's difficult to see how any investor will see this as a calming of nerves. This is essentially a statement. The Chinese economy is becoming more central controlled and it's less of a market economy. From an investor's point of view, just look at the recent massive losses when China cracked down into the hundreds of billions. And further capital control in China, and lots of businesses and individuals have complained they can't even move money out of China. One of the major investors in Chinese tech sector and others, Japanese SoftBank, just recently announced he's pausing all China investment pending further kind of clarification.
That's Howard Jang with our editorial partner, the BBC.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
The International Energy Agency expects the Delta variant to bring down demand for oil. Not only has the variant brought new COVID restrictions in some parts of the world and stirred up anxiety, at the very same time, OPEC has plans to increase supply. And all this together means prices are falling, on Monday reaching around their lowest level in 2.5 months. That is the story of oil in the short term. Long term, bigger things are playing out. Two of the largest U.S. oil companies, Exxon and Chevron, are looking to grow in the renewable fuel space. They're actually behind their European rivals. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is here with more on that. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning.
So where do these two companies currently stand in terms of taking up renewable energy?
Both companies have been criticized for their slow approach to renewable investments. Exxon and Chevron have spent a lower percentage of their capital than companies like Royal Dutch Shell and Total Energies on these initiatives. Right now, renewable fuels account for only 5% of U.S. fuel consumption, but that's expected to grow as different businesses move to cut carbon emissions.
And Exxon and Chevron both say they are looking to adapt some of their existing facilities into places where renewables can be made. How does that work?
Yes, they're looking at processing raw materials like vegetable oils to make renewable diesel and gasoline, and they want to do it without greatly increasing the cost. Some refineries are spending billions of dollars to reconfigure their facilities to make these kinds of products.
Well, I mean, if it costs billions of dollars to do that, how are they going to do that without increasing costs or spending?
Well, commercial production of renewable fuels is, bottom line, more expensive than making conventional gasoline unless it's paired with tax credits. Chevron is partnering with the EPA and the California Air Resources Board to try to find a way to produce fuel that would qualify for emissions credits. Other refiners have cashed in on similar federal and state incentives. Chevron says it hopes to co-process biofeedstocks by the end of 2021.
Marketplace's Kristen Schwab, thank you so much.
Thank you.
2020 was a tough year for colleges and incoming students, kind of goes without saying. And according to the College Board, there were about 120,000 more high school students who chose to delay starting college last fall compared to the year before. In an effort to keep those wandering freshmen from finding themselves at other schools, Boise State University tried something new, a gap year program for college credit. As Boise State Public Radio's Troy Oppie reports, the program attracted both new and existing students.
Boise State's pilot program served about two dozen students last year, like Autumn Lay. She'd had a tough sophomore year and had already decided to work instead of going back to college.
And then gap year came, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what I need right now. So this is awesome that now there's a program that I can also get credit for.
For a fraction of the cost of regular tuition, students get credit for independent study or work within a theme, like entrepreneurship or public service, and completing a project. The pilot program offered career and academic counselors, staff and peer mentors, too. Five guides for every student. Program director Kelly Myers.
That was the real magic of it. A lot of us just really wanted to be able to serve and support students in a time of great uncertainty.
But that secret sauce was too expensive to serve more students. Myers says they adapted it for small cohort groups instead of one-on-one.
We're helping them connect to people and opportunities that align with their interests.
They also raised the cost of the program 33%. Myers says that means they'll break even and can grow to serve as many as 500 part-time gap year students.
I think the full-time student is going to decreasingly be the norm.
That's Dr. Lou Sanborn, Senior Vice President at Ruffalo Noel Levitz, an enrollment and fundraising consultant group.
If we live in an experience economy right now, and it's clearly what consumers are telling the marketplace, then education needs to be able to understand how it needs to reframe itself.
Adding the gap year program helped Boise State hold on to students like Autumn Lay, who now plans to pursue an education degree.
That helped me to realize what I wanted to do and what fits me best as a person.
And other schools have taken notice. Boise State is partnering with Louisiana Tech University to establish a gap year program there starting this fall. In Boise, I'm Troy Oppie for Marketplace.
And we just want to note that Boise State Public Radio is an editorially independent community service of Boise State University, which owns its broadcast license. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us.
Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.